Chapter 3. The newest crop of hotshot officers readily agreed there was something almost magical about the way modern warships were constructed. Jason Hutter had fallen deeply in love with the third-generation ships of the line the first time he had seen the design, and Argent was most assuredly the prettiest girl at the prom when it came to the captain's corps and their bragging rights. Hutter was a self-admitted romantic. He often opined there was no more glorious creature in all creation than a maiden resplendent in all her finery. This was usually interpreted by colleagues and rivals alike as a fanciful metaphor for the unblemished Citadel-class hull, 740. Command 1 approached the enormous weapons platform from her port quarter. He tapped the transponder indicator with a gloved finger in the Academy-approved manner to make absolutely sure his shuttle was transmitting multi-frequency encrypted friendly signals on all of Argent's pickups. He knew what his baby was capable of if she detected an unauthorized scanner contact inside her command zone. And he knew well the only thing worse than being vaporized by your own ship's point defense was knowing that your ship had opened fire on 18 cases of 30-year-old scotch. Green and white running lights glimmered. A ship of the line was a vessel engineer's expression of sheer power. The shape was meant to convey an intimidating potential for destruction. Her formidable engines, mighty main batteries, and lithe energy weapon emplacements were breathtaking, even for someone not acquainted with the design genius. The soaring main hull gave the enormous vessel a majestic profile. Her sweeping triple flight decks were as innovative as they were formidable. Hutter's ship could launch and recover squadron after lethal squadron of smaller ships, ranging from deep space fighters to surface Vex. Argent was brand new. There were some inboard spaces where crew recruits swore if they could still smell new paint. Some of the officers had to admit they had never seen so much expensive hardware in such pristine condition all in the same place before. Hunter had made a point of walking the decks and visiting every compartment, berth, and space within hours of receiving orders to take command. He knew a 23-year-old skipper already had his share of challenges to overcome. Breaking tradition would be nothing more than tempting luck, and all captains, young or old, knew one thing about Skywatch duty. Luck was at least as important as everything else put together. Hutter had his enemies. At least three flag officers directly opposed his rapid promotions, but when faced with the realities in his jacket, that gleaming Sky Shield Legion decoration on his uniform and his short, fiery billet as flight leader of Yellow Jacket 9, where he became the first ace fighter pilot under the age of 20 in fleet history, even the most shrill objections were inevitably quieted. What he had was the respect of the men and women he had fought with. There were some things even Skywatch Academy couldn't teach, and there were some collars where a captain's insignia belonged, age be damned. There were also some ships that needed a crew up to the task of following a captain, like Jason Hutter, into battle. The officers that recommended his promotions had high expectations, and Hutter knew that no matter how accomplished his crew became, he needed even better officers. Reassembling those officers was the captain's current mission. After expertly landing Command 1 on starboard flight deck 3, Hutter powered down and disengaged the shuttle's controls. The atmosphere normalized, and the environmental computers balanced pressure between the shuttle interior and the crowded, magnetically sealed 7-acre flight deck before the airlock indicators switched to green. Hutter's comlink went live, and the familiar voice of the ranking crew chief sounded from the omnidirectional crystal speaker in the captain's uniform collar. "What have you got, Skipper?"
"I've got the hard stuff, Chief." Hunter punched the hatch interlock and opened the shuttle's side door. Duncan Buckmaster was always a welcome sight. He was at least twice Hunter's age, with the service stripes to prove it. Within an hour of learning, the captain had requested his assignment to one of the most prestigious commands in the entire line. He had become Hunter's staunchest ally. The speed with which he shaped up the Argent's flight crews was the stuff of legend. He was 3 weeks away from mandatory promotion to Master Chief Petty Officer, the highest non-commissioned Skywatch rank. "Good to have a non-trainee command officer back aboard, sir," Duncan said as he activated the shuttle's disembark ladder. "Everyone's been nervous as a new bride's first Thanksgiving around here with the junior division in charge, and I'm starting to feel like a dad left home with all the kids." "Master Chief, I can only promise you this. When I finally round up my truant officers, you just might long for the days of the junior division. I've got some of the fleet's biggest delinquents waiting for us on Jupiter 5, and we're going to blow the roof off of Scarry's." Hunter slapped Buckmaster's shoulder. "Why don't you take the hot down with us? We'll set you up with a steak and a stein and tell some story." "I appreciate that, sir, but you told me before we left Oil Can City you wanted Paladins, T-Hawks, and Wildcats ready for action in 2 weeks. Well, today is day 10. I'll take that steak if you'll take 2 out of 3. Poyd conceded, Master Chief. Let's call it a rain check. Hunter turned and pointed as he made his way to the magnetolifts. I owe you one. If I don't deliver in a week, you have an open invitation to the captain's table for dinner. Much obliged, sir. Where do you want all this hooch? Just put it somewhere customs can't find it in case we get waylaid." Hunter synchronized his personal chronometer with the shipboard time and jogged to the flight level lifts. This was one party he couldn't be late for. Chapter 4. Captain on the Bridge. The 24 officers and crew hastened their activities as the battalion Marine Corporal stationed at the bridge entrance announced Jason Hunter's arrival on deck 1. "Wall, since I don't have an XO, how would you like the job for the next 9 hours? Hunter asked abruptly as he took his command chair. "Aye, sir," the ensign replied nervously. "Very good. Get me a flight operation status report, comms, bring us up on the JA, and get this morning's priority messages. Ops, I need deck status. Nake, give me an intership channel to engineering. Helm, report our position." A chorus of quiet eyes followed each of Hunter's orders. The activity was well rehearsed and efficient, even if the crew members themselves were unusually nervous. The combination of their sudden assignments, the new hardware, and the confidence of their boyish captain combined to make the bridge of the Argent seem like a training exercise, even though it was clear this was anything but. "Our position is 290 miles, bearing 131 Mark 60 relative to the Boomtown Tower. Course plotted for Jupiter 5 and on the board. ETA, 8 hours, 53 minutes. Hunter waited an appropriate interval while the activity bustled around him. He pretended to check items off a tablet before he spoke. "Well done, Ensign." Walls almost blushed. "Thank you, sir." "Do as fine a job getting me that flight status, and you'll be on your way to an official XO's command." The ensign startled himself out of a self-congratulatory haze and turned back to the wraparound display of the vessel's delicately mapped, scrolling flight deck operation status reports. "Intership channel open," Dominique replied. "Madison and the boilers lit?" "Like jack-o'-lantern, sir," came the snappy reply. "Outstanding. Can you give me best speed 4x4? And then some, sir." "Very well. Stand by to engage the mains. Bridge out." Operations reports deck status 1 through 34 green. Crew secured for all flight modes. The operations officer could have easily passed for a recent high school graduate. In fact, the more Hunter thought about it, he realized she probably was precisely that. "Helm, engage main engines and stand by to navigate." "Aye, sir. Helm answering. Main's at your command." The comms officer spoke up. "I have one priority message, sir. It's from Commander DSS Fury." Captain Hunter had actually taken a breath to issue his next command before he seemed to deflate like an attacking Spartan general, interrupted by a crying infant. "Let me guess," he sighed. "My long-suffering darling sister wants a word." "It's from Commander Hunter, sir." "Very well, open a channel." The blue and white Pegasus emblazoned emblem of Task Force Perseus filled the Argent's main viewscreen. "Well, well," Hunter began with a sarcastic tone. "A task force! Haven't we reached the rare air?" Commander Jace Hunter's eyebrow-raised expression replaced the circular task force banner. Her trademark garrison cap looked especially intimidating when magnified to fit the Argent's forward bulkhead. "You got something to say about my ship, sir?" "I wouldn't dream of it, Commander." Several of Argent's bridge crew looked back and forth between the viewscreen and their skipper. Were they not opposite genders, most would have immediately agreed the two ship captains could easily be mistaken for one another. "My crew is just now realizing I have a twin sister," Jason said in a deadpan tone. "I already explained to Fury's bridge officers you were a lab experiment gone terribly wrong, sir," Jace replied. "I just wanted to send along my compliments to Dr. Deverly. You will remember to give her the card I had flown from one end of known space to the other, won't you?" "Of course. Do I look like a heartless lout?" "Permission to speak freely, Captain?" "As you were, Commander. By the way, since when have you been flying your own flag?" Fury took the point at Gaterne Station last month. When the task force arrived, they were down three ships. I was senior officer present, so I got the job. "Congratulations." "Thank you, sir. Now the important question. Have you built me a robot that could clean a room yet?" "With all due respect, sir, my mini-bots are not cleaning utensils. Now, if you'd like to borrow Echo for a couple of weeks, I'm sure she could get Argent's house in order." "Not for the love of all that's green and growing. Don't you dare let that siren-obsessed wheeled alarm clock anywhere near this ship. My medical officer would have to submerge me in tranquilizers to stop the nightmares. Belay the request for a cleaning bot. Just draw me up some ideas for a swabby machine or something." "I'll do what I can, Captain." Fury out. The bridge crew did their best to look serious, but several of them were too busy covering up their smiles and desperately trying not to laugh. Operations reports, Argent Space Lane secure, navigation cleared for all flight modes. "Thank you, Acting XO Walls." The ensign blushed again and tried to sit up straighter without inadvertently pulling a muscle. "Helm, navigate course 131 Mark 60. SNS screens to 15% power. All ahead full." "Aye, sir. Helm answering. Mains engaged. All ahead full." Captain Hunter reclined in his command chair and toggled the main view screen to a forward view of space and the overlay of the navigational corridor to their destination. A clock began ticking the ETA down from 8 hours and 53 minutes in the upper right corner of the screen. The 5-million-ton DSS Argent surged forward and accelerated towards the Jupiter system's fifth planet.